Okay, and welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron. I was talking with Ken Hommel about some television there. We were discussing whether I should watch Dallas or not. I want to see Judith Light versus Patrick Duffy. I'm entertained by that notion. Oh, there's Vanessa Shaw already. Okay, so welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron. www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook. You go to the search bar, you type in the Matthew Aaron Show. You'll click like, and then all of a sudden you're getting all our exciting posts. Hi, Chris. How are you? Chris just had a meatball. He's a little excited.
Little Chris Hommel.
Yeah, little Chris.
Our youngest fan.
He's a little excited. He just had a meatball here at Taste Chicago, Joe Montana's restaurant here on 818 Hollywood Way in Burbank, California. Best deep dish pizza in town. It's the only Chicago.
Only, really.
Well, but it's still good.
Yes.
Luckily. I had the Italian beef the other day. I love the pepper and egg sandwich. Pepper and egg, that's like the dieter's sandwich.
Right.
It used to be the Catholic sandwich. Now
right.
It's the dieter's sandwich.
Well, I like the idea of he should do it like Johnny's in Illinois where it's only on Fridays.
Oh, I do like that. Or when they have the weird Wednesday one, too.
Yeah.
For the first day of Lent
during
or whatever.
Lent, yeah.
Yeah, during Lent. Matthew Aaron Show is also on Stitcher. You can follow us on Stitcher. You can listen to all your favorite podcasts on Stitcher. Mine, I believe Adam Carolla's is on there. Mark Maron's.
Don't listen to those, though.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a big thing going on right now where all the podcasts are getting sued, and we haven't gotten our lawsuit yet. I'm asking for it by bringing this up.
You know,
but
that, I have to say, that's the benefit, though, that we haven't been had something approached to us yet of doing a show for nearly 2 years while staying completely under the radar.
I know. We are under the radar of lawsuits.
Yeah, and not much else.
Someone claimed...
Lee Capreas, hello.
Lee Capreas is with me, of course. Someone claimed that they put a patent on podcasting. So they sued Carolla, and they're suing a couple other people. And
what was their proof?
I don't know what their proof is. Oh, I'm sure they have the patent. I'm sure that's the proof. But, I mean, they claim that this way of distributing content was created by them, and they want you to pay for licensing in order to do it.
But if it's under the Internet, which was not patented by any one individual, doesn't that nullify it?
I don't know. We're going to find out.
You know, Australia just got around to patenting the wheel a few years ago.
Really?
Nobody patented the wheel.
Really?
Some guy did it, yeah.
Well, he's getting some checks in the mail, I'm
yeah.
sure now.
Yeah.
That's really smart. Vanessa's ready whenever. Vanessa Shaw, of course, Side Effects comes out Friday.
Yeah.
I saw it the other night. I absolutely really liked it. I got to tell you, you and I talk about these screenings, and I get very nervous about going to screenings.
Very paranoid.
Yeah, I'm just not a big screenings guy. I'm not like all those other guys at the screenings who are, you know, they all have their online media outlets and whatever, and they report the news and whatever, and movie news and TV news. And, I mean, we just shot a pilot, and obviously I'm more about just interviewing people and hosting people and getting to know people. And so when you go to these screenings, you're like, oh, man, if I don't like this movie, and then so-and-so comes on, and then I got to pretend to like the movie. And I could tell
right.
all our fans on this show, and I could proudly say this, I don't remember ever lying to you once about whether I liked the movie or not.
No, and this is not to speak highly of our ethics or something.
No.
Matt and I, if you're listening, don't really believe in lying about liking something, which might be something that you might have to sometimes do when you're in this line of work and we can't do it.
So I do want to say... I really, really enjoyed Side Effects. Open Road, Tom Wartenberg over at Open Road. They're putting out Side Effects Friday. I read an article today that we'll talk to Vanessa about right now. And, of course, you know, I'm 29 years old, so I've been following Vanessa's career forever. Of course, growing up, Ladybugs, and then Hocus Pocus.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, when you're growing up, those are like your movies.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't really... Listen, no one's watching Fellini at 13, okay, pal?
I know. All right. Listen.
Okay.
All right. So, listen,
it's Rodney Dangerfield, it's soccer, and then, you know, you got a hot 13-year-old in it, like Vanessa. So
okay.
That was my cup of tea back then.
Yeah.
My biggest crushes growing up were Vanessa, Anna Klumsky.
Okay.
Who else? Who is the girl?
Who is the
girl that played Icebox in Little Giants? I swear to God. Oh, she did it for me. I don't know how, but she did. I forget who it is. She was an American president, and then she, like, fell off the face. Maybe she went to school,
Are you
whatever.
One of these guys that was really into Gilmore Girls?
No, that was past that.
Your,
was,
you weren't
I was,
hitting
like,
the...
19, 20,
okay.
Gilmore Girls.
All right.
You didn't like Little Giants?
Little Giants is okay.
You're a loser.
Come on.
You're a loser. Vanessa, hi, how are you? Are you prepared?
I bet I've seen Hocus Pocus more times than you have.
Probably not.
We should have a some
probably
kind of,
not. I okay. live in a house
focus
full
focus
of...
Focus off?
Okay. I have two sisters. I live in a house of women.
Okay.
There's been a lot of Hocus Pocus in my house.
I'm sure.
So, Vanessa, first of all, I want to say I'm so happy I love Side Effects.
Otherwise, this would be a bad interview.
Well, we were just talking about how I go to these screenings, and sometimes I really... And I hate going to the screenings. I hate going. And this is something I really wanted to see because it was Soderbergh and you're in it, and Channing Tatum and Rooney Mara and Jude Law. Yeah. I mean, it's everybody, right? Yeah.
Well, we don't want to have someone on and just like talk shit about the movie we just saw.
That's
true. We're not dicks in that sense.
Right. Yeah. So I was very careful.
So
about
I would have been canceled if
it wouldn't have been canceled, but it would have been a lot of us talking about Ladybugs, which we will be doing. A
lot of Ladybugs.
But but I have to say, genuinely, this movie is really, really good.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of, like, De Palma films, a little Hitchcock maybe. But here's the interesting thing. The first thing I want to talk about is I was reading an article today. They were talking about how hard it is to market this film because you don't want to give away anything.
That's right.
So, I mean, I know this is not something you as an actress probably think about, but how do you market a movie like this? Is this something you guys even talked about when you were putting the movie together or thinking about it? Like, how are we going to sell this thing? Or do you guys just go in there and do your best as actors? And that's it.
Well, we do that. We do our best as actors. But, you know, if you're curious, you can find out how they're marketing the movie. And a lot of people turned down this film because it wasn't marketable in that way. I think, you know, Open Road was the distributor that finally picked it up because they were willing to hide the twist.
Yeah.
And I credit them for that because, you know, most people want to ruin. I mean, how many movies do you see nowadays? I refuse to watch previews because they ruin everything in the
they
previews.
They give you
and
the entire movie. Not only do they ruin the twist, they give you the whole movie.
Yeah.
It's just as bad as it was in the 80s and 70s where they literally played the whole movie in the preview.
You won't believe.
Oh, yeah, it was awful. Like all those old Charles Bronson movies.
Yeah.
Really?
All the old Chuck Bronson movies, you saw them kill his wife. You saw them kill his daughter. You saw him kill every single person that was after him. And then at the end, they even show you the ending.
You saw him kill the bad guy in line. And there'd be something saying, you won't believe the surprise ending.
I remember, I showed Lee the trailer to 10 to Midnight, a terrible Charles Bronson movie.
Yeah.
And I showed him the trailer to it. And Lee, am I not lying? Literally, the final scene of the movie is in like half the trailer. The final scene.
Yeah.
That's so, wrong.
Yeah, right. So they just give away everything. I'll give you another movie you did that was very hard to market, and they had to hide a lot of stuff, was Eyes Wide Shut.
That's right.
Right.
So as an actress, these are challenging movies. These are great roles to do because it's different. But at the same time, these are studios putting them out, big studios. These aren't indie movies.
Right.
So what do you think is the dilemma for a guy like Tom Ortenberg at Open Road Films? Like he put out The Gray. And you didn't know what The Gray was about. You thought it was Liam Neeson versus wolves.
Right.
And then you find out. So the way they've marketed this movie is how? How do you market this? Like when you do a talk show, when you do an interview, how do you sell people to see this movie without giving anything away?
Well, for Eyes Wide Shut, everyone was given one line that it's a movie about sexual obsession and jealousy. And that
is that
was
what
it.
They told you guys to say?
That's all you need to know.
Say. Yeah. And then that was pretty much from there. People had to take it and just, you know, watch the movie themselves. So, you know, what we say about this movie is it's a modern day thriller.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which it truly is. You know, using everyday items like, you know, things that we consume, or know someone who consumes prescription drugs, which is really not the actual plot of the story. It really goes into a whole other mode of, you know, where the thriller finally takes a lead in that respect. But it's what Soderbergh does best, like using everyday things that, you know, marketable things that we have in our lives and making it scary, which is, I guess, the way that you really market any movie. Like, that's, either horror or thriller, you know, like Double Indemnity was about, you know, the insurance.
I was going to bring up that movie, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like things that you're so used to, and then, wow, you get totally screwed in the end, and you can't even believe it happened, you know? So I really feel like that's the best way to describe it is, it's a modern-day thriller.
Yeah, because I didn't know how to come on here and, like, talk about it. I mean, I can tell you about the first act, but then after the first act, like, all bets are off, and anything I give away, because that was the great thing, too, about this movie. So I'm watching the first act, and it's nothing like the second act, and it's nothing like the third act. And there's all – here's how well-written and well-directed this film is. There are so many hints where I'm like, I can't give it away. Oh,
I know,
I
want
to talk about it so bad. But, okay, like, for instance – for instance, I did, in the first 10 minutes of this movie, I go, oh, this is about a bunch of fucking yuppies who like taking prescription drugs.
Right.
And what happened?
No.
But that's a clue to, this is one of those movies where every minute counts. Like, you'll be looking back at the 90-minute mark, at the 20-minute mark, and going, oh, remember when they were talking about that, and you just thought it meant this, and yeah, it's great. It's great in that regard, and I mean, it's just really a really good movie, and Jude Law is really great in it.
Isn't he?
And most of your scenes are with Jude Law. I gotta tell you, I'm not against Jude. I think Jude's a fine actor. Some of his movies just aren't like my cup of tea, like Gattaca. Everyone loves Gattaca.
Right.
I fell asleep during it. I could care less. But
the Alfie remake.
I gotta tell you, I think this is one of his best roles ever in my mind. At least for a mainstream moviegoer, like, because a lot of Jude's stuff has been like really powerhouse, kind of like acting indie film kind of stuff. This, for a mainstream moviegoer, you're gonna look at Jude Law and you're gonna be like, he's really good, really, really good.
Exactly. I think you know, there was a hint of that in the character he played in Closer, but
yeah.
He does that He does that falling apart at the scene so well, and you just are like, he's so in the moment with each part of the twist and turn of his character as he was in Closer that it kind of makes you feel like you're on this ride with him. And so if it were somebody else who didn't know how to take you down each road just as he's experiencing it, then I think we all would feel like, you know, this guy's ultra confident, knows what he's doing, who cares? But the fact that you're stumbling as he stumbles, you know, through this, you know, web that has been woven, he really, I think, is a fantastic actor in that way.
He never overacts in this film. There's not one scene of overacting on his part.
Exactly.
And when he does fall apart without giving away too much, as his character progresses or degresses, it's so subtle.
Yeah.
But every facial tick, every movement in his face from that, and this is why it's so important to be an actor, because it's not even so much so always about delivering your lines. A lot of directors would argue they need actors who look a certain way, and they don't give a shit about them talking. And there's a lot of directors that say that. This is a perfect example, because Jude's face just slowly and slowly and slowly, every scene, there's just this different little look in his face, and you can watch as his character goes through this whole thing. It's incredible. He did a really great job. You play his wife in the film.
Yes.
Okay, here's my thing about that. All right, so you go into this role, and because this is kind of like there's a soapy aspect to this role, right? There's a little drama to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how much do you take from your own life to bring to this role? Because obviously, I'm guessing your life, I don't know you, but I'm guessing your life's different than this role. Yes. So as an actress, what do you take to it?
Well, I think perhaps just as Jude approached his, I'm not sure, but, you know, and we do have to go toe-to-toe in the movie, I feel like, you know, the best thing I could do was be in the moment. Like, I really did a lot of what ifs. Like, what if this were happening to me? How would I support my husband? How would I, you know, wake him up out of certain, like, delusions that he has? You know, these are the things that I had to just say, be really present in the moment and just do a lot of, like, okay, this is really happening to me, and how would I react? And I really rooted it in the fact that this family is a very, like, upwardly mobile family.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, she lost her job in finance. I really put that into play as well, that she's, like, you know, a woman who's in finance and can – and. It's really about the black and white, and it's really about what's right and wrong, and, you know, deal with it, you know, bleepity bleep. You know, and
you can cuss on this show.
You know, Thank you. I'll know that for a future episode.
We should say that at the beginning of every interview.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I think she's by nature of her being this powerful woman in New York who survived finance, I think has this kind of, tougher edge about her. And she isn't that, you know, cozy, comfy kind of wife that's
right.
One-dimensional. It's like, okay, honey, whatever you say, I'll just follow along and support you. But she has something to say, and she has, you know, her life is at stake and her family is at stake, really.
It was interesting because when I saw this movie, I thought you were really good. And then I watched House of Cards this week. I saw all 13 episodes. I love it. And Robin Wright's character on that show is also very strong. She, like, they don't write her like your typical woman character, which is great. And it actually brought me back to your performance in this, where I'm like, it made the writing even stand out more because it was like, I just saw some really great female performances this week. And Rooney Mara, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Where and it was really refreshing to see. And like, so I'm watching House of Cards, and now I'm thinking, oh, Vanessa can do all this kind of stuff.
That was
impressive. That was impressive. But you should watch House of Cards.
I know.
It's great.
I like to see it.
It's amazing.
Their premiere was next door after a Q&A that we had in New York, and we went afterwards.
At the Odeon? Was it the West Odeon? Is that the premiere?
I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't remember where we were.
New York references.
You just get driven to places.
Yeah.
It's a great
show. But I thought the best compliment I could give to you about this film is you match Robin Wright in House of Cards, step by step.
Thank you.
The best compliment I could give.
Especially,
I idolize her.
Especially because in 2012, there were some roles for women in movies that I saw that were just really not so imaginative.
Yeah, a little bit.
So
it's
good to see that. I'm kind of big on that.
What do you look for when you take a script? Because I know you only do like one film a year. And then, you know, I know you also took a break because you went to college and stuff, which I want to get to. Because you started out, you were a child actor, which is, I want to get into that. But what do you look for when you take a role?
Because
you tend to do pretty good movies.
Well, thank you.
Is that luck or do you like pick them yourself?
I tend to be very picky, and my representatives are always kind of trying to push me to do more. And because that's obviously the business, and you have to be, work begets work. So if you do more, then people will hire you more. But for me, my taste is to look at the script first, and then director who's directing it, and usually that combination is the winning combination for me. I think you can always add more to a character. In my mind, I feel like what's on the page can always be, fleshed out, like beyond. There's many characters that I've played. Even people who saw Two Lovers who read the script were like, I didn't see the character the way that you played her.
Yeah.
You put so much more into it. Even this character I did in 40 Days and 40 Nights, she's kind of a one-dimensional character, but I just made something more than it was. And I just feel that if you have the right people supporting you to kind of explore then what's on the page.
Do you have an example of a choice you make that's how you made a character more than one dimensional, or that's how you added something to a character? Do you remember anything that you did specifically in any of those movies that really made them more than they were on the page?
Like with Two Lovers.
Yeah.
Well, with Two Lovers, obviously James Gray wrote a great script.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people felt that she'd be even more vulnerable and that you would actually clearly see that Gwyneth Paltrow's character was the one to choose, even though she was messed up. But even Gwyneth was very kind and said, I really felt like the way you presented her was much more than what she'd read. But I think in terms of making it equal, like you couldn't decide who would be the right one to choose.
Right.
It's not just he settled for the sweet Jewish girl. It was like a fight all the way through to
right.
the end.
So let me ask you in specific. Okay, so there's the first scene you're in this film. You and Jude are having breakfast, and Rooney Mara's character comes to Jude with an emergency.
Yes.
And you're not very receptive. Now, is this an idea that did you decide to not be receptive? Do you talk about it with Steven and Jude and you go, all right, how am I going to react when she just comes here? Because you could be the understanding wife where you're like, oh, okay, it's his job or whatever. Or you could start showing the cracks in the relationship right there with that scene. So how did you choose to act in that moment?
That's a very, very good question. That scene was actually, I don't know if people know, but it was added afterwards as to give more of the element of, here we go on this ride, and here's how she's invading everybody's lives and, you know, continuously ruining it step by step. So this scene was shot differently, and then we reshot it. And so it was added in this configuration later. So before I didn't have a chance to react, there was no way because they were separate, and he pulled her way off camera for me and away from my earshot. So, you know, I really, again, just being in this moment of the character was thinking, you know, she's first of all nervous because she's about to go on a job interview. This girl comes along. I kind of think she needs a lot of help, but at the same time,
right.
I need my time with my husband, and what is she
doing? She's inconveniencing you in a way, yeah.
So, Stephen was encouraging me of adding those dimensions to it. Once I started doing it, we rehearsed it, and he said, oh my God, it's so crazy what you're doing. It's like you're kind of repulsed and you're intrigued, yet you have some compassion, but then it goes away, and then you're just like all by yourself. So he
and you see all that.
Yeah, so he just kept saying to do that more.
Them want to reshoot this and include you into the conversation?
To add tension to the movie and to bring a sense of what Jude's character decides to do is to not be with his family in that moment. He decides to take care of her.
That's why it works. He makes the choice in that moment to not listen to you before your big interview. I'll be 5 minutes. I got to go.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it's on the heels of me asking, my character asking, you know, she takes a beta blocker before her interview to calm her nerves, which her husband gives her,
right.
You know, Jude's character gives her to make her feel better. And so she asks this moral question of, is this okay, what I'm doing? Which is kind of the moral question of the whole movie. Is it okay to take these drugs, you know, these prescription drugs, which, you know, it's a trial drug that Rooney Mara's character takes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then you start thinking, like, throughout the whole movie, oh, my God, what's really happening and what's going to happen. But then, obviously, we know it takes a different path. But this is kind of like the moral voice of the character and, you know, combined with Jude's decision to veer off into this world of complete, you know, devastation ultimately.
As an actress, how do you take this role? So you're very successful in this movie. The movie's already getting great reviews. I'm sure it's going to do really well. So how do you take a role like this and build it into the next thing? Like, how do you go about the next project?
Well, with me, my fortune always is that someone sees me and then puts me in the next one.
Yeah.
I have a hard time just doing, you know, what I admire of most actresses is like just doing, you know, pounding the pavement, which I do anyway. For some reason, I feel like that's my fortune is to be able to get work based on the last thing I did. That's what happened from 310 to Yuma to Two Lovers to this movie, Big Miracle, that I did recently. And then the casting director saw me from Big Miracle and said I'd be good for this movie. So
that's a totally different movie than this movie. So what did you ever ask the casting director what they saw in Big Miracle, which is a movie about a whale and a dolphin, and whales, right? I get all those amphibian
dolphin-y
movies confused.
But cute thing.
Okay, so you're in this family film. You're in this family film, and then all of a sudden, a casting director says you'd be great in this. How did you ask why?
I didn't get to ask why because I haven't seen her since that comment was given to not to me but to my representative. But she, I guess, saw me as she hadn't seen me in a while and saw me as this mature character in this, you know, this movie where I play, you know, an aide to Reagan, you know, and so more of a professional, which they perhaps were looking for. for in this film is like that you just buy her as a professional that she was in finance.
That's so crazy how
that's
that works.
I'm assuming.
I would have never put two and two together like that, but that's why she's a casting director and I'm not.
Right.
There you go. So they see things. I mean, it's the same thing with Sharon Bialy, who sees Bryan Cranston and Malcolm in the Middle and goes, he'd be great in Breaking Bad.
Right.
You know, and you're like, where do you get that? But okay.
But
all
okay,
right.
Sharon.
It works out really well.
Yeah. That is what makes them do their best, you know, is that they really have an inkling.
So what's the difference when you work with all these different personalities, and you've worked with a lot of big personalities. So what's like the difference between a Soderbergh and a Stanley Kubrick?
Well, I think they're both fantastic filmmakers that will obviously leave a legacy in their wake. They're just, in their preparation, two different kinds of people.
Yeah.
Kubrick is methodical, completely a perfectionist.
Right.
Researches things to, like,
for
the
years.
Hills. Yeah, for years. And isn't ready until he feels he's ready, kind of thing. Soderbergh just, you know, decided at the last minute when another thing fell apart, Man from U.N.C.L.E., okay, I want to do this movie, and, you know, puts it together within a couple months, and then we're shooting. And he's in the moment. He decides things in the moment. He decides where the character should go in the moment. He edits as he goes. You know,
so things can change,
like,
on the fly with Steven. Like,
yeah.
You guys can do a scene, and then he'll be like, you know what, even though we've pre-produced for this scene, we've put money into shooting it this way, we're going to do it totally different. We're going to rewrite this whole scene, or we're going to redo this whole scene.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if he would rewrite a whole scene, but he definitely, on set, the day of, we had some, you know, suggestions of different lines, we would say, from the writer, Scott Burns, and we added something because they were thinking about it. And so,
Do you ever read a script and go, even for a movie you've done, and go, no one would say this line. Like, you would read a line and be like, this is really bad. Like, this is not how normal people talk.
You're talking about practically 90%
I know, that's why I asked. That's
all
why
drama,
I asked, because when I go into auditions, and, you know, they expect you to be perfect, and you got to do what you do, and then, but you read this, and you're like,
frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
The prepositions are wrong in this script.
And that's the memorable one.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Vanessa, I've read scripts without punctuation, that, like, punctuation screwed up,
right.
Like, spelling is wrong.
I know.
And what do? You sit in there, and you go, by the way, misspelled.
Right.
So what
I don't mean to be a bit of a Felix Unger.
So what do you do as an actress when you get to a line where you're like, first of all, the grammar's awful. Second of all, no one would say this. Do you just do it because you're getting paid to do it, or do you try to talk them into rewriting the line?
If you become a producer or a slash writer, you have some more power than just the actor. I mean, you really, an actor's job is to do what the director's vision is. And, oh, my gosh, I remember I took an acting class. It was just Shakespeare class. And the acting teacher said to me, and all the students, you know, I know a lot of you have a lot of crappy lines given to you. She says, but you have to not just go, and, like, you know, pretend that you didn't say it. She's like, you have to do it with the dignity, give yourself the breath that you would with Shakespeare's lines. And believe me, it'll be believable, even if it doesn't seem believable to you in the moment when you read it. If you commit to it, it works, you know?
That's a great piece of advice.
But it's also like the standard advice, like, well, that's where you come in. You know,
right.
Like they tell you that,
no,
like,
but why
all I want is the girl. And
no,
you have
I hear
to, yeah.
But why
that's
I think
where
it's a great
in,
piece
meaning.
Of advice is because, in a weird way, she's preparing these actors and actresses as teacher for the real world.
Yeah.
Where she's saying, you're getting hired to act, so you might as well do the best you can, even if the line blows.
You'll be reading some pablum.
Yeah, right. Right. You could be doing a commercial for Cialis. You don't know, and you got to read it as it's written, you know?
Yeah,
and you
got to
sell it.
And
you got to sell it.
Nutty. It's awesome.
All right. So,
whole thing.
Let's talk a little bit about you. Ladybugs, Hocus Pocus. You do a couple things here and there, a couple indie movies. You take a break. Did you take the break, I'm assuming, to go to school, college, or was it college?
I did. I really admired Jodie Foster when I was growing up, who was obviously this.
It's a good role model for someone who's in the business
young.
Yeah.
I literally saw Freaky Friday and then Taxi Driver within a year of each other, and I was like, what? That's the same girl did weird Disney movies and then this intense Scorsese movie? And I was, and I literally, as
what's
you can
the one
tell,
where
I
she
didn't...
played like the gypsy kid? The con artist.
Oh,
she was like
Carney?
A con artist.
Carney?
Yeah, Carney or something.
Yeah.
And she'd con like old women and stuff. I don't know. It just reminded me of that. But yeah, she'd go from doing that to Taxi Driver.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right.
And so I was thinking, gosh, I want to be like her. And I would read articles about her, and she said that she, you know, earned all her money to go to college. And actually, this was just right in time when I decided to be an actor. And my mom's friend, who's a music producer at the time, was literally like, if you don't take Vanessa into acting, I will. Like, threatened my mom and said, you know, because my parents weren't well off, you know, this could be her money for her future, for college. And I was like, that's right. I do. I want to go to college. And my parents, it would be hard for us to make it for me to go to college. So I did. I earned money for my future and I went. And it was interesting.
You hated it, didn't you?
Like my first year of school. It was hard.
Really?
The freshman year is hard for
everybody. Did you go away from here?
Yeah, I went to Barnard Women's College in New York.
Okay, why is it every kid that grows up in L.A. has to go to college on the East Coast?
I don't know. You guys
want to get away so bad that you go all the way to the other coast.
All the way to Brandeis / Columbia / NYU Film School.
Yeah, they all do.
Yeah, right.
And if you can't get into those, you go to Boston. If you can't get into those, you go to Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And you just go down the East Coast
list.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because it's painted as, you know, this
until you're all the way down
League
in
schools.
Pensacola.
I think we're all kids and we want to get away for a while.
Yeah.
And so you go there, the first year sucks.
Yeah,
how do you get through the first year?
Well, I really was like, you know, I loved New York, obviously. New York is a great city, but I just decided really at that point to root myself in my Buddhist practice because that was all I had. I was like, okay, if I can't find
anything. When did you start doing Buddhism?
I started when I was 12.
Oh, really? Wow.
Because my parents started when they were young, and so I was born into it thereby.
That's groovy.
Yeah, it was really important for me to take that step in that direction at that time. Otherwise, I would have been drinking way too much and wallowing away in my misery. And it really helped me to just get through those times, you know, to go inside and, like, find the answers inside rather than, like, blaming it on my school or whatever. I ultimately did transfer to the Ivy League of the West, which was, that's what they call it, Pitzer College, which is one of the Claremont colleges. And then I got Eyes Wide Shut when I was there. I didn't expect that.
And then do you have to make a decision? Now, wait. All right, so you still have an agent during this period, but you tell your agent, I'm going to school, I'm going to take a break, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But your agent gets sent a Stanley Kubrick
movie,
and they have to bring it to you.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
How do you go through this choice? I do want to go back to this. How do you make this choice first? Eyes Wide Shut. You know if you leave school, you may never come back.
You think you can always come back. I mean,
that's what everyone tells themselves, but deep down everyone knows I'm not coming back.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you're just like, oh, okay, so I'd be in the movie by Stanley Kubrick. Gee, let me think. Was it like that? Like, what was the decision like?
Well, it was funny because I was in the middle of finals, and I had stayed up all night writing a paper, and my mom called me and was like, you got the part in Eyes Wide Shut. It was, you know, obviously going, it was shooting within a couple weeks. And I literally was like, had woken up, rolled over, picked up the phone to, you know, when she called, and then promptly hung up and rolled over and went back to sleep. Because I just didn't even, like, it was too bleary.
Too tired.
I didn't even understand. And then also, I had watched Clockwork Orange. I had seen Lolita.
Yeah.
And they definitely had an indelible mark in my mind. But after I got the part, I started watching all of his movies. And I'm like, oh, my God, he is a prolific filmmaker. I had no idea. I'm doing this movie with Stanley. It was so, like, that's when it hit me. So that I ultimately, hands down, because my parents were like, you have to do this movie, decided pretty much, you know, within a day's time of finding out. But
so your
really
parents are even telling you.
Yeah.
They're like, you got to leave.
Yeah, they were.
You're
like,
out.
This is it. This is your...
School, whatever.
Exactly. You'll be regretful if you don't, you know, so...
Yeah.
You're glad you made this choice,
though. I did. And you're right. Ultimately, I
didn't go back. You
didn't go back,
did you?
I went back for it one week.
And then you're like,
for my
fuck
junior
this.
Year, I was like, I've changed forever. Because I did go to school because I thought.
By the way, any guy that sees Eyes Wide Shut while you're on a school campus, you want off. You get out of there.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, listen, just keep walking.
They're all going to think you're like some sex-crazed actress.
I know,
and
God.
Like, oh, no, you're so glad you didn't go back.
Well, it's funny because Stanley, it didn't make it to actually, you know, it was on the editing room floor, obviously, but we actually did some extra parts to the scene in Eyes Wide Shut, which had elements of my, like, schooling in it. He actually asked me about what I was studying, and, oh, when you're seducing him, why don't you, like, mention what you're studying in school, because it's supposed to be this awkward scene, you know, where he has never done this before, and so it kind of went in a more comedic route for a bit, so I think that's why I got cut out, but, you know, asking about my, like, sociological studies that I was doing at the time and adding that into the movie.
When you hear all the stories about, like, in the media about how much drama there was on that set and everything, do you remember it like that at all? Do you
was it happening around?
Like, I've never met anyone. I take that back. I've met one person who's worked with Tom Cruise and not enjoyed it, but everyone else I've talked to loves Tom. So I'm assuming you had a great experience. So how much of this was true? How much of this is media fabrication with Tom and Nicole and everything that was going on that set?
I mean, I was really removed from it. I don't think I didn't see anything. I saw them being completely gracious to me and to each other. And I mean, I think each person had their own individual experience being on such an intense set, because Stanley is a perfectionist.
Yeah.
And so every shot was meticulously planned. And those who couldn't handle that kind of intensity either quit or didn't make it to the end of the movie. And just, you know, it was challenging for everyone. So I'm sure there are things I didn't see. But while I was there, it was really fun. I was like a kid in a candy store. I had never experienced this kind of acting before because, again, I started out doing, you know, Ladybugs and Hocus Pocus, which are, you know, pretty much what all that's required of you is to be your natural self. There is no need to go into, like, backstory and digest, like, you know, the process. And I was like, this is what acting is. I was really that close to quitting acting because I didn't know that there was anything beyond that, like, that you could really delve into characters and get into this mode of rehearsal that
so
was
Stanley
intense,
Kubrick
you know?
Helped you discover your love for acting.
He's absolutely the person that just helped me discover that.
So what's the difference between doing a scene with Tom Cruise and Rodney Dangerfield?
Well, they're both very intense method types.
Right.
So
what's
Rodney Dangerfield writes his lines on the other actor's forehead.
Oh, my God.
That had to be an eye opener to you, because wasn't that your first movie, Ladybugs?
Yeah.
Okay, so in your first movie, you're working with Rodney, who I'm guessing is not G-rated even around kids.
No.
You know, you'd be shocked.
Really?
Really.
He was a gentleman.
He was a class act.
Really?
Oh,
he was classy. People were
telling when
he
was around Jack A.
Right.
It was all
maybe let it go with Jack A. I would let it go with Jack A. She's hilarious.
She is hilarious.
Anyway, there was one time where someone made a bad joke, like an anti-Semitic joke on set, and he lost it.
Rodney lost it,
He lost it, and he said, do you see these kids right here? They never heard that kind of joke, and he banished that person from set.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, he's serious. You don't mess with him. He's like, you know, you could tell there are jokes to be said and there are jokes not to be said. Like, you know,
right.
This is no... These children have pure ears. You should not teach them about, like, you know, obviously,
right.
Like, any sort of...
That's so funny. Because all I think of when I think of Rodney, I think of either the bathrobe being open and his balls hanging out.
Right.
Or going to a caddy...
That's true, though.
Yeah.
I believe that one.
He's a gentleman, but he did have his bathrobe.
Yeah. An eight ball in one pocket.
Right, right. Or I think of him going to the Caddyshack, you know, and not even wanting this role, and he's sitting there with Harold Ramis, and who else was he sitting there with? And he's doing lines
role?
Of coke.
Yeah.
No, he was doing
God.
Lines of coke in front of them.
Yeah.
He had no, like, so that's what I find funny about Rodney.
Ladybugs, though, that was made before he started to become overbearing and impossible.
Yeah.
So
that's before Meet Wally Sparks.
Yeah, right. Well, no, just in general, he just was not.
Yeah. Hey, wow. Rodney's a legend, though. So your first movie, you get to work with Rodney.
Yeah.
Your second movie, you get to work with Bette Midler, who's another legend.
Amazing.
Okay, but all these people that you
with
work
a robe
with,
hanging open.
Do you think that's right? With
no.
her robe hanging open, right? That's great.
No.
Not bad.
These images.
So, Kathy and Jimmy. No, I love Kathy. You know what? Kathy's kind of sexy.
Kathy is
after
sexy.
Watching
He's
King
hilarious.
Of the Hill. After watching King of the Hill, like Peggy Hill's like my dream right now.
Okay.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay. So, do you think it's just what happens when you become an A-list actor that all this gossip and these tabloid articles and even in Variety, Hollywood Reporter, Deadline, where they talk about what a pain in the ass everyone is, because you've worked with supposedly every pain in the ass there is.
Yeah.
But you don't have anything to say that they are a pain in the ass.
No,
that
I don't
was
know.
Great. Tom's great.
It's true. But I'm not lying. It's I feel like maybe I was like in a pocket when they were
so why does this
nice.
Happen
maybe,
though in this business though? How does that kind of gossip and stuff get started?
Well, I think, you know, it starts, you know, obviously there could be some seed of truth, but at the same time, I think, especially with someone like Bette Midler, who is a strong woman, you know, in Hollywood, people don't want strong women. They want them to be, you know, polite and, you know, saying yes to everything. And, you know, I'm sure that she has her particular ways of doing something, and that pissed someone off. But she was always
but so
professional.
So do guys.
And then
you feel
maybe
like
that's
there's
the same
a thing
with
where
I don't know,
when guys do things, it's okay, but when women do them, they're a bitch?
Yeah.
That happens,
I mean,
right?
It is. And somehow I've circumnavigated that. I don't know how, but I've been, like,
because you
have
show
avoided
up and
that.
You read your lines, even if they're bad.
Even if they're bad.
You got some questions, right, for Vanessa? Sure. Okay. Oh, I forget your name. What's your name?
Allie.
Okay. Allie.
You're tagging me out?
Allie came to me.
Nice.
Allie Woo. Came to me outside, and she goes, I have, or someone told me, Caesar told me, she goes, I have questions for Vanessa. I go, whatever.
Allie, this is awesome.
Right, whatever. You're holding up my hocus pocus gossip, but all right.
Okay, are you kidding me?
I got material you can use there if you need to go to my notes.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Here we go.
Yeah, we just
oh, by the way, Joe
Montana
says hello.
I know.
And so does Jacob Aranestis.
Oh,
everyone's
nice.
Hitting me up this week going, tell Vanessa I say hi.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah.
You know, Joe Montana played my dad in the first thing I did for Steven Soderbergh.
I know.
It's very ironic being here at Taste of Chicago.
I know. Yeah. Joe was saying she played my dad. Everyone's played Joe's daughter by now, though.
I know.
Every woman I've met has played Joe's daughter.
He's such a great guy.
No, it's great. He's the best. Okay, Allie. Questions.
Allie,
shoot
go for
them.
It.
Hi.
Hi.
First off, I want to say that you are absolutely stunning.
True.
Thank you.
She's amazing. I'm a huge fan of yours. Ever since Hocus Pocus, I mean, I was saying, if you want to talk about Hocus Pocus, we can talk about Hocus Pocus. I watch it every Halloween.
Aww.
My sister and I have bonded over that movie, and her name is Allison.
No way.
My name is Allison.
Allison. Oh,
I mean,
Allison.
When you're young, it's the kind of things that you grasp onto. Mm-hmm. But, I think you're amazing. I have followed you, you know, you had mentioned earlier with the Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
I follow that a little bit, but I also went to, like, some weird point in my life, and I started, like, researching that. And I came across an interview you did on YouTube with SGI, I believe it is.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah, and everything that
the
you
Buddhist
said.
The Buddhist organization.
Yes,
yeah.
And everything you said, like, resonated deep within me, and I actually watch that probably once a week.
So what are the things Vanessa said in that? Do you remember?
Yes. You're in Helen Keller.
Yes.
Is your inspiration.
Helen Keller's my
really?
Inspiration.
Yes.
Life is either a daring adventure or nothing.
Yes.
Wow.
I love that quote. Yeah.
And it just, you know, how answers are within us, not out like little Buddhas in us.
Yes.
Not the big Buddha out there.
Yeah, there is no big Buddha out there.
So when you talk about answers within, and you use this towards your career or you just use this towards your personal life too, what do you mean by that? I know there's I know it's like a whole religious philosophy and process, but in a short way, if you can explain, what does that mean to you?
Well, the answers have been means that we have the solutions to our problems inside. We don't need to look outside for the solutions. And therefore, we can heal ourselves mentally, spiritually, physically from within. Not to say that there aren't things that we need to use. Like, if you are in an emergency situation, you should go to the hospital. Like, those kinds of, I'm not like that kind of, you know, believer of, I'll just heal myself from a bullet wound.
Yeah.
You know, that it's very practical. You know, Buddhism is reason. So, you know, when it comes to those situations, you do need help. And it kind of goes back to this, you know, side effects, because people say, like, about the whole prescription drug thing and how it's gone overboard. I was reading this book recently that's called The Philosopher Within. And it was by the same author who wrote Plato, not Prozac. It's a dialogue between... The Philosopher Within is about is a dialogue between the Buddhist president of our organization, Daisaku Ikeda, and Lou Marinoff, who wrote that book, Plato, Not Prozac. So his belief in Plato, Not Prozac is that, you know, every person has their own, if they have their inner philosophy, then they can heal themselves. It's not really about, like, over-medicating ourselves. And the problem is, which I think the writer actually talked about so beautifully, he said, our society nowadays... it's really, like, geared towards declaring war on sadness. Like, that you can't experience something normal like sadness. Like, there, like you have to annihilate it, and you have to be perfect. And I think that's a very American, Western way of looking at life. So Buddhism helps me to just go, wait a minute, with all this craziness of, like, you know, the business, the ups and downs, and just the ups and downs of life, where do I go? I can go inside myself and remember that I'm the Buddha inside, that, you know, there's no being, no, you know, husband to look that is going to solve my problems, or like any sort of, you know, external situation like fame or fortune.
Yeah.
That it's if I'm not happy inside, then no circumstance on the outside is going to help me at all. So I know that was longer than you asked for.
No. That's because I'm very interested in that, because right now I'm reading Jeff Bridges' book about using Zen and Buddhism.
Oh, he's
too.
A Zen Buddhist?
Yes.
No way. That's awesome.
Yes. And I'm reading that now, and I just shot a pilot a few weeks ago, and I was getting really stressed because a lot of it was, like, on my shoulders to really, you know, I felt that way. You know, you feel that way. When you want to do something really well, you want to carry the load. And I was using this book, and there was a lot in there that you're talking about that really helped me center myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that kind of stuff's very important. Even if it's not your practicing religion, I also think stuff like meditation and just time for yourself to clear your mind, that stuff's important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you do as well. Do you, like, so when you make choices in life, and you, like, if you're confused on if something's right or wrong,
mm-hmm.
is that something you use your Buddhist methods to discover?
Yes, because when you start to, like, what, you know, this Buddhist philosophy is about, again, like, that you, each person has this ability to understand what to do from the inside out.
Yeah.
So if you are, you know, what we do is chant every day, and we chant the words Nam-myoho-renge-kyo, and that's, when you chant that, you're harmonizing yourself with the universal law. It's kind of like the Force in Star Wars. Like, if there was a tool to harmonize yourself with it, that's what we do. We chant and we harmonize ourselves with it. So everything that resides in the universe is in us. So I can decide more with a sense of wisdom rather than a sense of, like, panic, worry, which is my tendency sometimes. And I'm able to see things more clearly based upon, okay, what's the real aspect of this, like, and that comes down to me harmonizing myself with my most natural self. That's the best way to talk about it. It's like, what is my most natural way, not dependent upon the certain things that I think society wants or my lesser self wants, like, you know, from a, you know, a fear-based place.
Yeah.
So that's when I really am chanting, I can understand things from that place of wisdom.
Do Buddhists get mad at, like, because I know, like, as a Catholic, you know, you get mad at, like, the people that only go to church on, like, Christmas and Easter. Do you get mad that people claim they're Buddhist, but they're not really practicing Buddhist? It happens all the time, doesn't it? Come on. I mean, I don't believe for a second.
Funny.
I'm not. I'd rather go to Vanessa for my Buddhism advice than Steven Seagal. Put it that way.
Why, thank you. No. I think the right answer really is if anyone's practicing anything that helps to surface them and others, I think they're on the right path.
Unless
like,
it's only surfacing for them.
No,
unless it's only
it's
helping
true.
Them.
It's really true because you can't be a Buddhist if you're only surfacing yourself. Because what you have to do is, and it's not in a cheesy like, oh, let's help others less fortunate. It's really about when you become happy, you can help others become happy because you kind of influence them based on how you feel and think about life. And if you're in harmony with yourself, not out of harmony with yourself, then people naturally around you will want to become more harmonious in whatever way they feel they should be. It doesn't have to be necessarily be they practice Buddhism. So I can't fault anyone who's trying to do that, you know, and says they're Buddhist, but kind of maybe falters in that practice. But because it's hard. It's hard to do it every day. It's hard to be mindful in that respect every day of, like, you know, being positively influencing yourself and others. You know, you want to kind of just be like, whatever.
Yeah.
I had a bad day. I want to go get a drink. You know what I mean? It's like, and not that drinking is all bad, but, you know, like, drinking yourself into oblivion. I mean, you know, so this is like, it's so much easier to go to your dark side and listen to that, and it's harder to like cultivate your good side.
No, that's smart.
Know?
That's smart. All right, so let me ask you this before I let you go.
Okay.
Weirdest thing that's ever happened to you on a film set? Is it Rodney and his rope, or was there weirder?
I don't know. Weird, like embarrassing weird.
Yeah, funny weird.
Oh my God, how am I going to just even like flip back into millions of ages? Oh my God, I don't think there's been anything that's been so shockingly weird.
Not as weird as Rodney in his bathroom.
Not as weird as Rodney, and I have to tell you, when I met him with with Jonathan Brandis, like we actually met him at the Beverly Hills Hilton, and he was there in his robe. This is Rodney.
Are you meeting him in his room, or is he
in his
robe
room,
in the
restaurant? But people were there. People were there in his room, and it wasn't just like me and
Oh, no, no, but I was wondering if he just walked around public in the bathrobe, you know, like he's just in the restaurant doing his thing.
No, he was in his room. It was, you know, at least more discreet than a public place. But, yeah, he was in his robe, his classic robe with nothing on. And I remember that. I was like, oh my God, I am 15 years old, and this is like pretty much the first time I'm ever seeing somebody's genitals besides my dad
talk.
Or, you know. And so I was like, literally poked Jonathan Brandis. I was like, oh my God. And I put my eyeballs like towards that area because he wasn't even looking. You know, poor Rodney was in his like own world. And Jonathan's like, oh, I can't believe you just made me look there. You're so wrong. And we just, like, forever laughed about that, forever.
In conjunction with the speech he gave the other guy about making the joke, and then there's that. So it's okay. It's not okay to make certain remarks in front of children.
I guess.
But it is okay for them to see. Right.
I know. Maybe he is a walking dichotomy.
No, I think you're right, though.
I think
Rodney's
understand.
In his own world.
Yeah,
he's in his own world.
He wants to be comfortable.
Well,
Catherine Hepburn said to be comfortable in your wardrobe.
Yeah.
Maybe he took it to
I'm sure
dream.
He was adhering to Catherine Hepburn's strict advice about acting.
Being comfortable while acting.
Oh, hold on.
Open your robe.
Oh, and by the way, I'm also supposed to mention TV Guide today cheered you. My friend Bruce Fress, you're in TV Guide.
No way.
Cheered for Vegas, working with my buddy Dennis Quaid. That's
nice.
Great.
Nice. That's awesome. Great. He did a thumbs up or something?
Or thumbs up. Thumbs down.
Nice.
You're up.
A cheer and not a jeer.
I know he also liked you in Side Effects. So are you going to continue to do Vegas?
I don't know. We have to tell the writers on the show now to do something about that. I was sent away for a little bit.
Show.
Everybody knows.
You can get your own show.
Okay.
That's
maybe
what
that.
I
maybe.
Think.
Maybe you can help that.
Yeah, I'm working
foster
on it.
That.
I'm telling you, I wasn't BSing you before. You're that good in this movie.
Thank you.
Robin Wright good. I'm telling
you.
I'm telling you. So thank you so much for coming out to Taste here, Taste Chicago.
Joe Montagna, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. And Vanessa, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Side Effects in Theaters Friday.
Yes.
I'm hoping
to see it, everyone.
I love Open Road. They're my favorite distributor. I mean,
I know.
They keep putting out risky stuff and giving it big releases.
Yeah, the Jake Gyllenhaal, Michael Peña movie.
And The Watch.
Yeah.
Yep.
And The Watch is amazing.
It's great.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so thank you so much, Vanessa. Do the
Thanks,
show
guys.
Again, whenever.
I will.
Whenever.
Thank you.
I couldn't believe it was actually here. I know most people don't know what this looks like, but I was like, this is where we're going to do it, in this amazing restaurant by Joe Montana.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
We only operate out of places that serve sausage in some form or another.
That's right. That is true.
It's good. It's cozy. It's,
the last place we were at was a hot dog joint.
Well,
so.
We can't be too far from our lakes.
But you can get a hot dog here as well?
Yeah.
I'm all about
it. Wait, do they serve veggie dogs? No.
No.
That would be gross.
No.
Well, that's the only thing
I
could eat.
Are you a vegetarian?
I am a pescatarian.
What is that?
Is that
fish
only?
Fish
only?
But I eat chicken, too.
Oh,
I don't know what you call that.
All right, so you're not a vegetarian.
No.
Okay. It's
cool. But I don't know. I can't eat regular meat.
Oh, they got peppers and eggs here, sandwich. Very good.
Yeah, I do the
pepper
and eggs.
They don't have a turkey. That's gross. You're just supposed to have a hot dog.
I do the pepper and eggs.
They got grilled chicken. Salad, sandwich.
Yeah, they do have grilled chicken.
Yeah.
You get the chicken
Maybe
marinara.
Maybe I'll get the chicken marinara or something with
marinara,
potato
little salad
wedges.
Right.
Yeah, there you go. See, you can
that's
eat.
Such
yeah,
a,
all right.
That's such a specific way of saying
it's
fries.
It's not
right.
enough.
Of saying fries, right. It's not fries with Montana.
Is that a
Chicago
way of saying it? No.
Joe will probably say yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I've never heard of it in my life.
Wedges.
Maybe Joe
can you pass me a wedge?
Maybe the wedge cut. Maybe the wedge chopper was cheaper than the shoestring
wedges,
chopper.
Like you
I
could
know.
Stop a door with it or something.
Yeah,
well, wedges, girls'
and
shoes.
They're huge, too.
Shoestring,
these potato wedges. They're huge.
Yeah, they're big.
They're big.
Okay, well, I'll have one.
All right.
I like
if
not
Allie
enough,
will have one with
it's
me.
It's not enough.
You didn't even get to ask a question, did you?
Did you, did you have another one?
No.
Oh,
well,
I asked all the good ones? Well.
That's why he does what he does.
God, I love sitting around with women who tell me how great I am. It does so much for
you
me.
You should continue this show.
I will be continuing.
Yeah. I like it's not enough for us to have the show here and promote it. We also have to convince the guest to eat here.
I know. Vanessa would be great
Pass
on Dine and Dash. She'd be great on Dine and Dash.
I think so.
Yeah.
What's Dine and Dash?
That's our other project. We didn't talk about that.
I was fishing.
That.
For you to ask.
I took the bait.
Joe Carnahan and I just did.
Oh, Joe. Yeah, I know Joe.
You know Joe?
Yes.
I like how you said that because I'm not sure what it means yet.
Oh,
but,
Joe.
I know Joe, too.
Well, I met him on a project. Jeez.
Oh, he must. What project?
Oh, God. It was ages ago. It was like about a violinist.
Joe was on a project about
I don't
a violinist.
Know, yes.
He must have stumbled on the wrong
side. Yeah, right.
Did that violinist have a gun on him? Or
yeah, right.
No, I know. No.
We did this project he's producing with me. It's called Dine and Dash, and what I'm doing is I get a bunch of our celebrity friends, him and I, and we sit around a table and we gossip and we have dinner.
Cool.
Yeah, and we
drink.
Did the first one at Scarpetta with Kate Walsh and Common and Dermot
nice.
Mulroney and Lucy
Dermot.
Lawless.
Sorry, I do know Dermot,
yeah.
as you know. One.
Dermot's great.
Mm, yes.
He's the best. And it was a lot of fun, and so, yeah, that's what we're working on. We're doing that.
So Dine and Dash, is that like Ding Dong Ditch? No.
No, they don't all get up and leave and skip the check.
Yeah,
no.
It's funnier if it was. It's funnier if it was, but I would have to write a script then, and
yeah.
everyone would have to agree to it, and
yeah.
no one
and
wants to read their lines as
pay told. Them after.
We would run out of restaurants real quick.
Oh, trust me, I'm paying everybody. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll run out of restaurants real quick. And then you start, and then people watch the show and they start doing dashing out of, you know, on their check.
Right.
Yeah.
We start a
Why
whole craze.
That?
I don't know.
Like a whole Clockwork Orange.
Because you can. Because you can.
Yeah, because you can. That's what it is. Kids.
You can.
Fucking
That's right.
kids.
Okay.
No, you'd
We're
be great
going
on
off
that,
on
though.
Tangent.
You'd be great on that,
Thank
though.
Thank
you.
Like you.
And I'll just get a bunch of hot women for the next one.
Yeah.
It'll
Ben Ali can ask more questions.
That's right.
Ali will host.
All right.
She'll be like, I'm Matthew Aaron.
So, Steven Soderbergh, Jude Law, Channing Tatum, Rooney Mara,
Catherine
Vanessa
Zeta.
Shutt, Catherine Zeta Jones. How did I forget her?
Or Zeta.
And is it Zeta Jones?
Yeah.
Is it Zeta? Whatever.
Well, because she's English. Zeta.
Whatever works
makes.
For her. love you, anyways. So, yeah, go see this movie, Friday, Side Effects.
Yes.
It is a really, really good movie. And outside of the, you know what, and to be honest with you, it's better than half the Oscar flicks that are out.
Really?
I think so.
Oh,
yeah. I'm going to quote you on that.
It is. I mean, that's like, I don't know. I wasn't too impressed with a lot of stuff this year. I know this year was a really good year for movies.
Right.
I don't think it was a really great... I don't think there were a lot of great movies last year.
Right.
I thought there were a lot of really good movies.
Yeah.
There were a lot of really good movies, and everyone was like, oh, what a such a good year for movies. But I didn't feel like there was that great movie.
Right.
So.
For me, I liked Life of Pi. I know I'm like
yeah,
one
Life
of the rarest people. They're like, really? That's the one you want to win? But
I can't imagine a Buddhist liking that movie. I can't imagine.
Yeah, it's not Die Hard.
Yeah,
no.
Right. No.
Right.
Although I love Die Hard.
Well,
yeah.
Die Hard comes out next week, so you better stop telling
She's already
everyone
seen
how much
it.
You love it. Oh, have you seen the new
Probably.
One?
Probably.
No. Oh.
Bruce is
I don't
dick,
get
though.
Any. Really?
Yeah, he's a dick.
That's not good.
That's unfortunate.
That
I really want
unfortunate.
To sit down with him and be like, why are you a dick?
What?
You got like $500
million. He was on my favorite
dollars.
Show when
People
I was
Moonlighting.
Moonlighting was
the best. Ever.
Yes.
The best show ever. Best writing of all time, Moonlighting.
I know.
Moonlighting's
amazing.
Amazing.
Oh, boy.
You know, I said that I liked Moonlighting the other day to a bunch of people before another radio interview, and
yeah.
they didn't know what I was talking
wow.
about.
Wow.
What?
Are you crazy?
Because they're probably 30... and younger.
I'm 29.
We're both 29.
She looks at me. She's like,
no.
I know. You're 29.
So they were not nerds.
They
like
weren't
us.
Nerds, maybe.
Okay.
Staying up late when your parents say
that's
you should go to bed.
Painful.
Staying up late till all hours of the night watching Moonlighting.
I
love that you
love
boys like it. I thought it was just a girly thing.
No,
maybe.
It's great.
Damn.
It's great.
I don't like it.
It's better than 90. Have you seen it?
No.
Don't say that.
You know you don't like it.
Usually people lie and say yes.
It is,
no
joke, is some of the best writing in television history.
It really is.
I did not watch it growing up.
At least the first three seasons. Fourth season.
No, yeah, the fourth season fell apart.
No good. But it's actually, because of Bruce Willis being such a dick, you actually for once in your life feel bad for Cybill Shepherd.
Oh!
So.
Okay.
Oh, God. I don't know where we're
no,
going
never.
Now.
Yeah, no, we're done. We're done.
Oh,
I'm done.
Man, we scare people.
I'm on Bruce's list, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure he listens to the show religiously.
Cybill has already given him your information
you
from her list.
Bruce was really mean to a guy. The guy that gave you the thumbs up today in TV Guide,
he
was very mean to him when they did an interview for Die Hard last week.
Oh.
Very mean, and it was not the first time that I've heard this story from one of my friends. Disappointing.
It is disappointing.
I just don't understand how you can have so much money and be so successful in this business and be such a dick.
Yeah. I'm always
you got everything.
And I'm so afraid when people say like the people that I love the most.
I know, me
I'm like
too.
Don't
I
say
hate
don't
it.
Say don't say how they are
that's
in real
my,
life. Please
that's
don't
one
ruin
thing I,
my fantasy.
That is
yeah.
one thing I can tell people when they want to come out here is just don't meet your heroes. Don't want to meet them. They will let you down. They're just people like you
They're
are.
Just people too.
Yeah.
Yep, everyone's people.
Yeah.
Well, Vanessa.
That's right.
Yes. Is that
is that a Buddhist chant?
No, it's a Barbra Streisand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same difference, I'm sure.
No, it's
for some people.
Oh man.
She is
that was the chakra she was
trying to get
reciting.
Me to come out of the closet or something right there. She starts saying some Barbra. She's like, you liked Moonlighting. If I sing some Barbra, we'll make
you.
Some news right here.
We'll get you out of there eventually.
Yes, last night didn't do that trick.
Wait.
At our house last night, I decided to light some candles and play some Celine Dion.
Because he has Spotify, he has some special Spotify, and he was taking it out for a test drive.
I was.
The Celine
with
the Spotify.
Her 1997 album, Let's Talk About Love, amazing album,
yeah.
Fantastic album.
I'm not a Celine fan.
Really?
Me
Are
neither.
You lying?
No, I'm not lying.
Whitney fan? You like
Whitney?
All right.
I like Whitney.
I wanted to bang her so bad for so long.
She,
around the same
right.
time I had a crush
That's
on you,
not, okay.
Whitney,
oh God.
Whitney Houston was like my older woman crush.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
She totally is.
She
I'm
was.
Not in the
crush.
Closet.
That
she
makes
was.
Sense. Huh?
Nothing.
How can you not admit Whitney Houston was
she
sexy?
Was, she was really sexy.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, I had a huge
yeah,
thing.
With her like,
I'm with you about Celine, though, Vanessa.
Oh, and we
no,
found out
Celine, yeah, no.
Icebox was Shauna
She's
Waldron.
Great. She has a great voice.
Shauna
She's
Waldron's
amazing.
Icebox. Caesar and Pat were all over that.
Really?
Yeah, and Shauna Waldron was hot when I was like 12.
Yes, yeah.
I don't know who these people. I don't know if these people are hot anymore, though.
Anna Chlumsky?
She's still hot, right?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah. Do you ever see any of those, like, old child stars? Do you guys, like, get together for barbecues or... like, what do you do with these people when you grow up?
Barbecues?
I don't know.
Child star barbecues. Yeah. Come on down.
But no. You were, like, in the upper echelon of child stars. Like, do you see Thora Birch or Christina Ricci?
I do see Thora. I haven't seen Christina in a while, but Thora I just saw recently, and it felt like she's, like, my little sister. It felt like family reunion.
I feel like all those women, to me, are the hottest women on the planet, because that's why I grew up with.
I didn't
grow up with Farrah Fawcett. I grew up with Christina Ricci playing Wednesday Addams, looking hot.
Especially in the second movie. She was cute. And by the time Casper hit, I was a fan. Big fan.
Yeah.
Casper was good, too.
Casper. Yeah. I remember when she showed her boobs in, what was it, Pumpkin?
Yes.
I rented that movie immediately. Yeah. But anyway.
She's kind of like an anime character.
She did. She is the first child star from my generation to show her boobs.
Are you sure? Thora was first.
Oh, yeah, Thora was in the ghost, in the hole. In the hole or in American Beauty. Oh, no, in the hole she went all out.
Right.
But in American Beauty.
I don't know about American Beauty.
But I think we'll have to do some research on this later.
Yeah. Cinephile. Yeah. Over on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Okay. We have a white coat that we use.
Wait, what's Cinephile? Is that a video store?
It is a great video store that we like in Santa Monica on Santa Monica Boulevard, right off that 405 there. And they have a wonderful selection, and we are big fans of them, and they're big fans
of them. They got everything.
That's awesome.
They alphabetize their movies by director. Their directors are alphabetized, and the movies, it's fantastic.
Because I was sad when Rocket Video went out of business, and that was near my neighborhood,
so
now I
have
to go to Cinephile.
This is the one to go to.
This and Vidiot's, which is
Vidiot's is not far, though.
Yeah.
It's a little further.
Sorry,
but
I'm a wimp now.
Devin Sawa goes to Vidiot's.
That's right.
Wow.
There's another child star.
Yeah, I never knew him, though.
When Devin was on, that was a big day for me, too. Everyone from my childhood, that's like big days for me.
That was the point of the show.
Yeah.
We crossed them off the list one by one.
Yep.
Anna Slomsky's going through.
Yeah, Anna's... Anna,
she'd probably come on the show.
Would she?
Yeah.
She better.
But is she shooting her show in... Where do they shoot that show? What's it call it?
I saw her on SVU. I thought she was on SVU recently.
Well, now she's on the... Oh, my God, this is embarrassing.
Which one?
I can't remember the name of the show. It's a cable show with the...
In HBO?
Veep.
Oh, that's right. She's on Veep. She is on Veep with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. That's right. She plays her, like, assistant or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember.
And I was just wondering where she was, and there she went. That's the same... Mm-hmm. I was just wondering where Mayim Bialik went, and she's on the...
Mayim Bialik's on Big Bang Theory.
It's so weird. They, like, pop in my head, and
then
they're there.
Did you know Mayim Bialik when you were, like...
No, I didn't get to meet her, but I knew Jenna Von Oy, who was on the show, and she was sweet.
Oh, yeah. Six. Is it six?
Yeah.
She
was cute. Blossom. Very sweet.
What a show. She's bringing it all back. You are bringing it all home for me.
And Soleil Moon Frye, I knew.
Really?
She was sweet. Yeah.
What's Tommy Chong's daughter's name? Ray Dong Chong?
Ray Dong, no. She was a little older than me, so I didn't know.
Oh, yeah,
she's beautiful. Oh, my God.
Did Corey Feldman ever hit on you?
Soleil.
Yeah.
He did? I knew Corey Feldman.
No, sorry, not Corey.
Corey Haim? He hit on you.
Okay.
Oh, I could tell.
Sorry.
All those outsiders were after you. I bet all those outsiders were after you.
They were.
All the Lost Boys.
I was like 12, but still they didn't care. No.
No, they don't care. He's dead. It's okay. No one's gonna be mad.
Oh my God!
He's not gonna be mad.
He's not gonna.
You didn't know Corey Haim's dead?
No.
You didn't know that?
So sad.
Ooh.
No. Yeah. Okay.
Well, all right. Could have been worse.
Rest in peace. Okay.
Well. Oh my God.
Any other guys hit on you that are now dead?
Yeah.
Now we're gonna start an investigation.
Right.
Who else?
Careers that are dead.
Jonathan Brandis didn't hit on you. No.
Of course. He was my first kiss.
Really?
Oh. Yes.
When you do, like, a first kiss at that age, do you, like, think you're, like, really, like, falling in love or something?
Oh, totally.
You do?
It's like, hormones are leading the way, not your brain.
So how do you guys, like, you don't have to say names, we can talk abstractly about this, but when you have, like, an onset crush thing when you're, like, in those kid movies, how do you, like, hook up Offset? That's hard to arrange.
Well, yeah, that's
you got parents,
it was easier
school.
For it was easier for Jonathan and me because we were on location. We would find places in the hotel,
just practice
in the fire escape.
Oh, boy. That is the life. If I, Buddhist, if I get reincarnated, I want to be a child star.
Doing a scene, doing a scene with you.
That'd be great, too. But that would be where you want to learn about puberty, being a child star.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that'd be amazing.
But I feel like that only leads to bizarre, deviant
But
tastes
now if I do that on a set, I'm a scumbag.
Yeah.
Or I'm like Warren Beatty, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like I'm James Toback more so.
You're cruising the set?
With the hair, right? Oh, see, she knows James Toback.
No.
Oh,
I
really?
Don't know him, no.
Oh, man. Dude, we need to gossip sometime. I feel some gossiping coming on. I'm reading a book right now called You'll Never Sleep in This Town Again.
Ooh.
So dirty. It's great.
Does it reveal people's
James
dirty
Toback,
laundry?
James Toback, Robert Evans, Don Henley, George Harrison, everybody.
Wow.
You name them. Beatty, they're all in it.
Wow.
Yeah, but these are all like women that were very much abused in this business and taken advantage of. And
so they deserve this voice.
Yeah, I actually thought I was picking up the trashiest book that hookers wrote, and then I started reading it, and I go, these aren't hookers. These are like actresses that got like screwed over really bad. And
it's very common.
Yeah.
So, even to this day.
I know. Yep. That sucks.
It does.
That sucks. See, you can do that when you're a child actor. You could be like, let's go make out in the back. Now if I do that, let's go to the casting couch. You're a scumbag. You're a scumbag.
15, you haven't learned how to degrade people yet.
No.
I still haven't figured out how to get laid in this business yet. I got to figure that out. I got to work that out.
Okay. What happened in this interview?
I don't know.
It's all falling apart.
I think it's turned into my therapy part of our interview.
She's now playing Jude Law. It's turned into our therapy session.
Yeah.
Right.
Vanessa, thank you.
I'll get you
out of here. I know you got to eat or whatever or go. I don't know what
to do.
Do
another movie.
But thank you so much. Are you doing another movie? What's coming up?
Are you looking at stuff? I'm looking at stuff, but I'm coming out on this movie called Electric Slide, and it's with Jim Sturgis, who's awesome.
I love Jim Sturgis.
Yeah, me too.
That's great.
He's amazing in this.
I thought you were going to say Electric Boogaloo, or what was it? Was it Electric
Breaking
Boogaloo?
Two, Electric
Breaking
Boogaloo.
Two?
Electric
Breaking Two, yeah.
You mean Breaking Three.
Man.
Oh, man.
I would love to do Breaking.
We grew up on all the same bullshit. I would love to see you in Breaking Three. Well, when the Sturgis movie comes out, will you come back?
Break in three.
Yes.
You'll come back and talk when Jim's movie and yours comes out?
Yeah.
That's great. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Allie, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, whatever.
Yeah, all right.
I'm going to play Robert Downey Jr.'s song while I take a break.
I do want to come back.
We
do
and
come
talk.
Back
He's
talk about.
Yeah.
God, there's so many
Here,
things
leave your
I'm
headphones
just
learning.
On people that are singers.
Leave your headphones on for a second. I'll give you some Robert Downey.
Come back and we'll talk about the pilot. The shoot.
Oh, the pilot in House of Cards. I really want to talk about House of Cards. I love that show. I'm
so excited to see it.
You got to see it. And
I know.
Here's the problem. You're going to start watching it, and there's 13 of them, and they're all available to you at one time.
That's a little much.
And you're
going
to have to figure out when to take breaks and when to go eat and when to shower.
I never know how to do that.
Just do like one a week or one a day or something. I don't know. But
I can't do that. I literally, when I got the season of Damages, I like literally couldn't even.
My favorite show. I love
Damages. Yeah, it's good.
I couldn't
Did you finish up Damages?
I didn't finish the second season, though. But
oh, you're, so you're early on still.
Well, I mean, I took a break and never came back.
It
was so intense to watch all of them in like literally. I watched them in like 4 days.
Yeah,
and what do people do that?
I can't do that.
There is a reason why things are weekly because literally your body can't handle it.
Yes.
Like too much information.
I did about 4 House of Cards a day for the last 3 days.
Yeah,
4 hours a day I spent with Kevin Spacey.
See, I can't do that for myself. I can't space things out.
What's
too much
your favorite TV shows right now? What are you watching?
I'm not watching any right now.
All right, House of Cards.
She's working.
It will be mine, House of Cards, probably.
Do you have Netflix?
I do.
Okay, then you're good. Yeah, just slowly. Take your time, but you're going to be hooked. You're going to be addicted. It's that good.
Okay.
It's that good.
I'll take your word for it.
All right.
Here's
some Bobby Downey Jr. Side Effects in theaters Friday.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Robert Downey Jr.
Robert Downey
Boy,
Jr.
What an emotional roller coaster.
The girls said they could feel the pain in his voice.
I know. I feel like I just got my groove back.
He's so fucking like charming.
I know.
He knows how to get laid. They really think there was pain in his voice.
I know. You see how they just were gushing.
I know.
It took a second though, because they were just like, at first they didn't, but then once he belted out some of those falsettos.
So there's two things I want to talk about before we wrap up for today.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I want to talk about is another thing I can't talk about too much, like side effects, where it's just there's so many twists and turns, and I just don't want anything away. But I got to talk about,
if you're not watching House of Cards on Netflix, you got to watch this show. It's up there for me with Breaking Bad and Sopranos. It's the first...
That good, huh?
The first season of this show is the best first season for a show I have seen since Breaking Bad. And to be honest with you, Breaking Bad's a show that got even better as the seasons progressed, and I don't think their first was their best. This show's first season may have been better than Breaking Bad's first season.
Wow.
It's that good. It's, you just have to... First of all, I just want to just, I'll just say, Corey Stahl, Kate Mara, they steal the show. Robin Wright gets her scenes where she's killer. All the characters are completely fleshed out. They're all three-dimensional. There's, I mean, the women are written superbly. It's a great view of Washington. I had no idea the show cost $100 million for 13 episodes.
$100 million?
For 26. I'm sorry, 26 episodes. So it's like $4 million a show.
Oh.
But still, that's a chunk of change. But I tell you this, David Fincher directs it, Joel Schumacher directs it.
Well, then, it's a very high-profile
Very high-profile.
There's
a lot of very good directors on this production. So it's definitely something you want to check out. Kate Mara, it just opened my eyes to her as an actress. She's amazing on this show. Corey Stahl, who I've always liked, he was in Midnight in Paris and also on Law & Order Los Angeles, where I thought he was fantastic. He's really good in this. And Kevin Spacey, of course, is Kevin Spacey.
Yeah. Is this going to be something that's on Deep Video, or is it only on Netflix?
It's only on Netflix. I think they're not going to put it on video because Netflix wants you to buy the subscription to watch it. I mean, I think that's the end game.
Right.
But I'll tell you this. For the $8 price it costs to stream on Netflix, $8 a month or whatever, get it for a month and watch all 13 and cancel it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like it, don't cancel it. There you go. So, but I'm sure that's what Netflix is trying to do.
Right.
It's definitely worth the $8.
Because I always wait for these things to come on video, so I don't fret about
it. Listen, a movie costs $13, $12. This is $8 for 13 hours of really good programming.
Yeah.
Really good programming. I think it's totally worth it. Check it out. And that's House of Cards on Netflix. Dana Brunetti is one of the producers. Kevin Spacey, David Fincher's a producer on it as well. Great, great writing, great directing, great acting. It's a total package. Check it out. We did a pilot.
Yes, this is our first show since we shot our pilot.
Dine and Dash with Joe Carnahan, EPing, and... we had Joe, Lucy Lawless, Kate Walsh, Common, and Dermot Mulroney. And this was a big project for you to work on. This was like your...
You got
to learn a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
What's the experience like?
Shot movies before, and I've been on sets before, but this was a much bigger deal.
Bigger scale, yeah.
Yeah, bigger scale. So there's about 24 things that have to be done before we can even bother starting. And going through each and every thing... And I'm kind of doing sort of a PA gig, so I'm just kind of helping set up, making sure people have what they need. But once we started the show, there was a lot more to be done, actually, during the shoot. Because I noticed you were at the table, you couldn't get out of it, and you needed drink services. And
yeah. Frustrating for someone like me who would like to be more autonomous.
Right.
Because I didn't get that opportunity.
But you can't when shooting something, because when you're shooting TV or a movie, you just can't.
That's what I want.
Unless you have people working for you who are just totally your indentured servants and you're like a tyrant type.
But from everything I heard, you did fantastic.
I was just trying to make sure. Well, here's the thing. I was just trying to make sure everything was going smoothly, because I would be sitting there next to Jim McCarron's, and I'd be seeing the monitors, and I'm being like, what happened there? And there'd be a monitor down, there'd be a camera down. I had to make sure someone know about that. You were screaming you needed more drinks, and I had to tell the waiters about it. Then there was a convention at the hotel. They started to spill into the balcony upstairs. I had to go tell them to be quiet a couple times. And you just needed a stage manager backstage. And that's not something that we had thought of, because everyone directing this was actually shooting it, so they couldn't get away. And I think in the end it worked out okay, but towards the end there was a lot of damage control to run. I didn't know it would be like that.
We were low budget, so we were understaffed, maybe 2-3 people.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone did their job so well that you barely knew you were understaffed.
Right. I have
that
to say
was great.
The people you had there helping the other crew members.
Pat Wimp,
yeah,
Hamza Jam,
and our director, they were all great.
Yep. And then you had Anthony Giuliano, who, by the way, put money in this production. One of our producers, Anthony Giuliano,
puts
a good amount of money in this production. He shows up last Wednesday, or two Wednesdays ago, and he learned on the fly, and he got so much done.
Yeah.
Because we unfortunately lost Pat Tobias to illness, and yeah. Pat, we missed you, and we love you.
He's alive, by the way.
We
didn't,
that.
He didn't die. We lost
him. No, Pat's the reason Vanessa's here today. So, but with Pat missing in action, Anthony really stepped it up, and
yeah.
Caesar did his thing, and Mikey stepped it up.
Yeah,
Mikey
was doing a lot. I was trying to do what I could.
Yeah, I'm so proud of all you guys. Yeah. The editors, Neil Fernandez is amazing.
He's going to work his magic.
I'll tell you something. Neil Fernandez editing this show, I'm like, dude, this is going to be a pain in the ass with Neil. Because Neil and I go way back, and I'm just like, this little Filipino bastard, he's just going to be a pain in the fucking ass. But I'll tell you what, that guy... Man, he went from being little pain in the ass Neil to Spielberg overnight.
Right.
And Peter Fitzer. And, I'm just so proud, everyone. I really appreciate everybody doing this for very little money.
The footage looks great. It's going
to
be
telling
a great
you, I said I want it to look like a Ridley Scott film.
Yeah.
I think very much so it looks like a Ridley Scott film. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really do think that design is there.
Yeah.
When I say that, I'm not talking Gladiator. I'm talking a dinner table scene in a Ridley Scott film.
Right.
Okay? But it does have that look and feel, which I'm very happy about. That's what I really wanted. I wanted it to be cinematic.
Yeah.
I really did. I thought part of the problem with Favreau's show was, I shouldn't say part of the problem. It wasn't a problem. This is the way he chose to do his show. But they decided to do it very low budget and with whatever cameras they had, you know, available.
Right.
And it looks that way. And I wanted this to look like you went to AMC and this aired before a movie. Instead of all those stupid commercials.
Right.
This aired before the movie,
right.
Which I think would be a lot better
instead
of an idea.
Instead of the AMC first watch.
Right. By the way, I'd much rather see this air before a movie than...
Than that.
Yeah.
Than, yeah.
And then behind the scenes of Monday morning.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, Fred. But, yeah, I would much rather see it. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely went into this and I go, and everyone's going to see this in the coming months. We're going to be, it's editing right now. It'll be in post until the middle of May, middle of March. And then Joe and I are going to take it around town. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is I wanted it to have a cinematic feel. It does. The crew, awesome. The cast, awesome.
Right.
I couldn't ask for a better cast for a first episode.
Yep.
I mean, this is a pilot with no network attached. You got Common coming out. You got Kate Walsh coming out. You got Dermot Mulroney, Lucy Lawless. I mean, those are four really heavy hitters that are like, I'm going to help you out, bro.
Right.
I'm going to do it. Yeah, why not?
That's tremendous that it came together that way.
So I'm so grateful and thankful. I want to thank everybody. What I'll do is this. I will promise you, Kate Kelton's coming on the show, I know, next week to talk with Lee and I, and we have another guest coming on. Kate's going to be, like, co-hosting with Lee and I. We got to figure out if we got to get four microphones or not.
Yeah.
We just don't have room for it right now.
A number of actors want my job.
Everybody wants your job.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Wait till they find out what it pays. yes, and that will
not
be fun.
Not enough.
Yeah.
But we'll talk more about the pilot then. I'll give all our listeners glimpses of the pilot and the process.
We'll give
throughout
you
the next
news
few
on it as it develops.
Yeah, because if I tell you all about it now, I'll never get to tell you about it again. I got to keep your interest salivating.
Well, plus we have to. This was just the thank you to everybody, and wasn't it a lot of fun talk about the pilot? We have to talk about.
We'll do the gossip.
The anecdotes.
Can I
from
talk some John Hamm too? By the way, when we do that next week, can you remind me?
I
just gave him a teaser here.
We'll both talk to him because something happened to me in the men's room at the Four Seasons.
Huh?
Not like that.
I'm gonna have a smoke.
Not
first.
In that way. But we got.
Can I talk to you after the show?
Yeah.
Caesar's like, you gonna have pizza?
You're just recording. You're not live.
No, I'm live.
No, we're live. Yeah.
You mind if I wrap up here?
Producer Caesar, everybody.
All right. Thank you guys very much, Lee. Do you want to sign off for us?
No, I'll see you guys. Bye.
That was it. I'll see you guys. Bye.
Yeah, I don't.
All right. Thank you for joining us on the Matthew Aaron Show. Side Effects is in theaters Friday with Vanessa Shaw, Channing Tatum, Jude Law, Rooney Mara, Catherine Zeta. Is it Zeta?
Is it
Zeta?
Zeta.
Zeta?
Yeah.
Fuck. Catherine Douglas.
And yeah, right.
Everyone else. Thank you. And Steven Soderbergh. Thank you very much. And we will see you next Wednesday here at Taste Chicago at 603 North Hollywood Way. Where I am going to have a deep dish. Is that what you're trying to lure me into saying, that I was going to have a deep dish? I am going to have a deep dish, because the sausage deep dish here is phenomenal.
Pretty good.
Yeah. But I was in the mood for a pepper and eggs. All right, whatever.
All right.
All right, we'll see you guys next Wednesday.
All right, bye.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio.